Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This year so far, Trent.
Let me find Trent. I'll ask him for you.
Trent Dilfer.
Dilfer from his end zone. Over the middle. That's complete. Shannon Sharp. Room to run. 96 yards and the Ravens are on the board.
14-year NFL veteran.
For the team to look me in the eyes in the huddle and see 10 guys staring back at you that had ultimate faith in you.
Pro Bowl quarterback for the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Let's look at the offense for the Buccaneers, led by Trent Dilfer.
Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Dilfer is throwing perfect strikes.
Why did Trent Dilfer drill that into Horace Copeland?
Super Bowl champion.
Dilfer going deep, and he's got Stokely, and he's in for a touchdown.
The Baltimore Ravens, for the first time in their franchise history, our Super Bowl champions.
Breaking down Justin Fields' tape after every Bears game.
You know, this was so good, Trent. We're going to give you your open back next week.
Thank you. I seriously need it. I mean, I get beat down all week long. And then Mondays, I'm like, oh, at least I get to hear 90 seconds of good stuff.
We're going to find a Fresno State highlight and add that in for next week.
Oh, there actually were a lot of those. So.
And that Fresno State offense is led by a sophomore quarterback. His name is Trent Dilfer. In a word, Dave Rowe, he is awesome.
He certainly is. Dilfer, pressure, hit in the backfield, avoids the sack, throws, touchdown, Fresno State.
Damn it, Trent! God almighty, Trent!
Trent Dilfer with Parkinson Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Trent Dilfer, the segment brought to you by global biotech company Horizon Therapeutics, where our mission to transform patients' lives is personal. We'll get to the Tony La Russa statement that is lengthy and has just been released. When we're done with this conversation, Jalen Johnson will join us at 4:30. Trent is in our Twitch chat, and he's also with us on the Circa Resort and Casino hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. He's watched the tape. He's here to make us feel better, worse about Justin Fields. Who the hell knows? Trent, thank you as always for the time. What did you see?
I feel way better about Justin Fields. I think I feel worse about the Bears.
Okay. I said it was Fields' best game of the year by far, but that
not even close.
But it wasn't saying much, and I still felt like I saw him play better last year at times than this year. So let's start with Fields specifically. What did you like?
I'll try to keep it quick because last week I feel like I just pontificated the whole time.
We like that though. We like when you talk.
Okay, decisive, really decisive. Rip some balls in the middle of the field off action. Beautiful deep ball, an amazing throw on the third down helmet shot to Pettis that Pettis drops. Movement skills are fantastic. Scrambles, that playmaker bucket. We'll go back to the buckets. I know you guys like that.
Yeah.
So the playmaker bucket was evident. And you see, this is what happens, and I did it too. I didn't watch the game live. I watched it on replay. So I looked at the box score first, and I'm like, oh, that was stupid because you see, what was it, 11 of something. It didn't look real impressive. And then you see, well, it's two drops. There's two to three throwaways, and there's two knockdowns that aren't his fault. So let's just say there's only two throwaways instead of three. I'd credit him for three, but let's say two. Now you're looking at six kind of others in the incompletions. So those aren't on him. He had two misses. He missed a swing route to the right. And he underthrew an outbreaking route to his right. I can't remember what down that was. It was kind of low at the ankles when it should have been more low outside hip. But besides that, he did a lot of really good things. He didn't get protected. He made chicken soup out of chicken, you know what, a couple times. And he converted some big third downs. I mean, that he played really, really decisively. And considering what he was asked to do, and again, we got to frame this in what they can do, what they're asking him to do, pretty well. Now, the fumble, the ball slipping out of his hand, I had not seen that outside of a cold weather game. I've had it happen to me a couple times in my quarterback life. Usually it's when the temperatures are around freezing, the ball gets heavy and slick. The conditions didn't seem that bad in New York. So anytime there's a turnover, it's a bad thing. I will say that you can never grade out really well if you turn the ball over as a quarterback. But just for the Bears fans looking for the context here, is, does Justin get better this week? Yes, he got much better this week.
Wow. That is not something that's been said a lot today in the Chicago media market. I feel, and a lot of others have said, so help us out, that it still looks like he is not seeing what he needs to see as he drops back. And when he gets to the back of the pocket, those plays where he needs to throw because the pressure's there to check down and take those throws, that is not there. There was a stat that came out from Pro Football Focus that in his game so far, he's had 49 throws under pressure and converted only 5 of them into completions. And I know it's asking a lot, but this is what the league is, that you have to convert those into completions. Do you feel like he is seeing what he needs to see as he's dropping back and is ready to make those quick throws?
Yesterday, yes. The only flaw that PFF has, and I like those guys, I've known those guys forever, I think they do a great job, is they don't understand the why of the play. They're doing data analysis without knowing the why on some of the plays and the what. You know, who's supposed to be where? Why is he supposed to be there? What is he supposed to be looking at? Based off TV copy yesterday, I can't think of one play. And there might be one that I'm missing in my, you know, again, I didn't chart this, but I can't think of one that his eyes weren't in the right place. I'll give you a great example. When they're backed up and he throws the ball way to his left, they get double A gap pressure, which, by the way, is terrible by the center. Well, let's get into this because teams are picking on the center and right guard. So, and that's a tough thing when you're a quarterback, when you know your center and right guard are square players and they're asking to play a lateral game. So teams are asking to play a lateral game and they're square players. So he gets inside pressure, a basic Mike Will stunt inside that should be easily picked up. But Mike has a right slide call. There's nobody to slide to. He should drop straight back, stone the first guy, back comes in, stones the second guy. Clement does a really good job of poking the one high coverage safety, his outside leverage, crosses his face. Justin's eyes are right there, ready to put it on his outside pad, and the guy's up in his grill. So, yeah, this is what the guys on local talk radio aren't watching. This is what PFF doesn't understand, is that, and you watch him based on what his job is and what he's being coached to do. This is yesterday. Yesterday, his starting point with his eyes, his progressions were right on point. And he just, I mean, it's nearly impossible when you have inside pressure all day long. I don't care who you are. This same type of pressure melted Tom Brady. It's melted Aaron Rodgers. It's melted Peyton Manning. I said it every week is on ESPN when I was there for 9 years. The kryptonite to any quarterback is immediate A-gap pressure in your face. I don't care who you are. When that pocket gets pushed back or there's free runners inside, your number one job is to protect the ball. If you step up and try to throw into that, you're risking ball security. So he's actually doing a great job, or did a great job yesterday, navigating some waters that were incredibly muddy.
We're talking to Trent Dilfer here, Parkinson Spiegel, on The Score. There was the play where they're down 14-6. It's 3rd and 10. They're at the Giants' 35-yard line, 3 minutes or so left in the first half. And he takes off and runs for the 12-yard gain, and they get a first down. Darnell Mooney was in the left slot, running up the left seam.
Yes, and they showed it. They showed an end zone copy of it.
Right, and he was wide open. Mooney, Trent, today has fallen on the sword and said it's a 4-vertical play. I think I was missing. I was supposed to be more to the right. It has something to do with learning the playbook more. Fields is looking to the right. I wasn't there. I ran the wrong route. And Eberflus said basically, you know, he said it's a basic play. It's just vertical for vertical. Mooney on that one is supposed to be bending across the formation. He's supposed to be bending across. He was not supposed to go vertical. I think that kind of caught him off guard a little bit. But he certainly had time on that. He certainly had time and could have rode the pocket more, but he decided to take it because what we were telling him is to take the check down or run on that when they're in that defense.
Yes.
So I guess my question is that a sign that Fields is being a little too robotic? If, yeah, Mooney made a mistake, but Fields should be able to improvise in that spot, or is that entirely not on the quarterback?
No, it's not on the quarterback. I'll give you the why behind it. It's actually, I'm glad you gave me some context there, because I thought two things. You look at the play side safety. So they show that end zone copy and you see Mooney and who's ever the number two receiver, the slot receiver running up on the play side safety.
Yeah.
And now I'm 50 years old. Right? I've been around football forever. It's really easy for my eye to say, oh, he could have naturally bent him into that hole because the safety's eyes turn to number two. Do you guys understand how we number receivers? Mm-hmm. Outside in, one, two, three. So the two receivers running the seam and the safety's eyes go to the seam. Mooney's number three. He's supposed to bend that a little bit and get to that middle pocket between the split safeties. Justin's eyes have to see the backside safety. So this is what the fan doesn't understand. You have to check the backside safety to make sure it's not a poach coverage. What a poach coverage is a too high look where the backside safety cheats to number three strong side. Aaron Rodgers made a similar interception a couple weeks ago against the Bucs. It wasn't a poach safety. It was a lurk safety, but he had number three running across the middle. He didn't ID the backside lurker safety, and he throws it right to the Bucs safety. Okay? Or is that the Bears? Wait a second. What game am I on? Anyways, Aaron Rodgers, did you guys play the – yeah. Was that the Eddie Jackson interception?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Eddie Jackson's he's had three of them this year. Yeah.
He had one against the Niners. The Niners, you might be thinking.
Oh,
of.
I'm thinking the Niners. Okay, no, I'm thinking of Rodgers versus the Bucks. Yes.
Okay.
I was right the first time. That backside safety, Aaron doesn't check. One of the greatest players that's ever put on cleats. Doesn't check the backside poach safety. Is actually a lurk safety, kind of the same thing. And he picks him off. So my point is this. I love that Justin is trusting that number three is going to work to the middle of the field, and I'm going to ID this backside safety to make sure that he's not poaching. Now, you also see from the end zone copy that Justin, as he's looking at that, also sees the running back, I think it's Herbert at the time, go and make a move on this in this massive running lane to his right, and he takes off and get the first down. To me, that's nice intuition, because what you talk about with the quarterback is starting point. Do his eyes start in the right place? If they start in the right place and then they're married to his feet as if you had a string attached from your eyelids to your shoelaces, and every time your eyes move, your feet go with them. That's progression passing. Starting point, married feet, married to eyes. That's what you're looking for if a quarterback is looking at the right stuff. On that one, his eyes start in the right place, his starts to climb, his feet go forward, his eyes go forward, and he makes an intuitive play and runs forward for a first down.
See, this is fascinating. So what a lot of us are trying to figure out and are concerned with is whether he's getting better in reading the defenses, progressing through his reads, and his eyes being in the right place right away. And Trent Dilfer saw yesterday as a step forward in that stuff, right, Trent? Because that's and people, if that's true, that's great. But it's hard to see that and believe that as we watch the game in this town.
Well, what you're going to fight, and this is natural, nobody's fault on this. You're going to fight, and this is why stats aren't important when you're a player until you become a coach, because you realize stats create narratives. And the narrative when the stats aren't good is that he was bad. That will be the starting point for the narrative. And I think it's the job of people that actually care about truth, not narratives, to say, hey, some weeks that's going to be true. Some weeks it's absolutely a stinker on the stat page, and it played out that way in the game. Bad game equaled bad stats. Sometimes for a quarterback, bad stats equal bad players, bad scheme, bad play calls, but you actually did your job, right? And that's why I think grading out, I'll always talk about how he would grade out. Now, I'm not his coach. I don't know their grading system. I'll use a grading system that I went through at multiple teams. I would have graded him out in the 80s. He would have been an 86, an 88, 85, somewhere in there, because he was decisive. His eyes started in the right place. He hit, for the most part, open receivers. There's a lot of stuff that were out of his control. He had a couple double pluses. So the way you grade this is, you know, you have a minus, a flat, which is just did your job, a plus, which is something really good, and then a double plus, which is exceptional. And you usually don't have many double pluses in a game. He had a couple double pluses, a couple of scrambles, and then the deep ball to Mooney is an incredible throw. I would give him a couple double pluses. He would have been in the mid to high 80s.
Good stuff with Trent Dilfer, and congratulations on Lipscomb Academy, by the way, continuing to be undefeated. Last thing this week, Trent. You mentioned some of the offensive line problems that the Bears have. How little does Justin Fields have to work with when we're talking about pass protection and pass catchers?
I don't hate their pass catchers. I think Mooney has a chance to be a really good player. I love the tight end. I think he's a good player. I think they can use their back. So I'd say, you know, okay in pass catchers. Run blocking, they're square players, forward square players. That means they need to play at their shoulder square, the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
They're going to be good in run blocking. They're going to really struggle in pass protection. There's no fixing it. They're just so you know, there's no cure to this. Now, you can get better and put in pass protection schemes that are more full slides, more full gaps, covering up the inside players. But, yeah, center, right guard are going to get picked on. The center is getting destroyed. The center is getting picked on, yeah. And it's going to happen the rest of the year.
Okay. So there is no solving the pass protection with the current personnel. That's
not for extended drop back third and – you know, must knowing pass situations.
Yep.
It's knowing pass situations that you guys are going to struggle with. That's why you're seeing so many bootlegs on first down. Or actually, by the way, they didn't call a lot of passes on first down. I charted the first half, 12 runs out of 15 first downs based on a really quick run through the box score. Now, three of those are scrambles. One was a sack. So I had four more. So it would still be 8 out of 15 were called runs. It's going to be tough in knowing pass situations. To be successful, you're going to have to use play action and you're going to have to throw in no and run situations. So you're going to have to throw in third and two. You're going to have to throw in third and one. You're going to have to be 60, 65% throw first on first down to protect those offensive linemen. Old Mike Holmgren stuff. That's what Mike Holmgren did for years in Green Bay.
Trent, great stuff. We'll talk to you after Bears and Vikings. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. See ya.
Thanks,
Trent.
Trent Dilfer, he watches the film, he hops in the Twitch stream and breaks it down for us, gives very good perspective there. We'll talk to Jalen Johnson in a little bit. We have the Tony La Russa statement.
We do have the Tony La Russa statement. It's very long. There's a few parts of it that we should definitely make sure people know. He mentions the pacemaker getting installed. Then he says this, during an annual private exam after the first of the year, a second health issue also was diagnosed. I decided to delay confronting it until the off season. While I was inactive with the pacemaker, the second issue was analyzed. The result is that a corrective plan has been developed by my medical team and implementation has begun. I informed the White Sox of the second issue while I was out of uniform dealing with the pacemaker. As I've stated previously, I continue to request privacy related to my health issue and appreciate those who have respected that request. My overall prognosis is good. I want to thank everyone who has reached out to me with well wishes related to my health. So that dovetails with what Dan Bernstein has been reporting about a second medical issue.
He also said he wanted to make it clear, at no time this season did either issue negatively affect my responsibilities as White Sox manager. And later in the statement, at no time have I been disappointed or upset with White Sox fans, including those who at times chanted "Fire Tony." They come to games with passion for our team and a strong desire to win. Loud and excited when we win, they are rightly upset when we play poorly. A great example of this support came in Game 3 of last year's Division Series. No disrespect intended to any of my other teams and their fans, but that was the most electric crowd I have ever experienced.
Backing up just a little, he does take accountability, at least in this statement. Our team's record this season is the final reality. It is an unacceptable disappointment. There were some pluses, but too many minuses. In the major leagues, you either do or you don't. Explanations come across as excuses. Respect and trust demand accountability. And during my managerial career, I understood that the ultimate responsibility for each minus belongs to the manager. I was hired to provide positive, difference-making leadership and support. Our record is proof I did not do my job.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's a good statement. And we obviously hope that whatever the secondary and seemingly serious health issue that exists for Tony, although he says his prognosis is good, is that he is able to deal with it and live a happy and productive life.
Man.
And then obviously on the baseball side, he is done managing. This is Tony La Russa retiring again. He will not manage again for the White Sox and presumably anybody else. And now the question becomes the search and who is next for that team.
Yeah. I was asked yesterday by somebody, hey, who would you bet on if you had to bet on somebody as the manager? And I don't know. It's too early. There's obviously like in-house names that are somewhat silly. Like, I don't think Ozzie Guillen is getting this job. There are some recently fired big name managers like Joe Girardi and Joe Maddon, who I think would probably take this job, but I don't know that the White Sox want to do that. I mentioned this guy as a potential GM earlier in the year, but Chris Getz could be a manager, and that's in-house. That is a shuffling of some of the pieces they already have. That's a development guy. He was on Inside the Clubhouse and was asked by Bruce and David about managing and mentioned that he likes to lead, and whether that's in the dugout or that's in the office, he feels comfortable doing it. I don't think it's going to be A.J. Pruszynski. It's certainly possible, but these are all the names that'll be out there. But keep your eye on Chris Getz if that is something he legitimately wants to do. A.J. Hinch was a front office guy who became a manager. There are others who have just, Aaron Boone out of the broadcast booth, whatever. You don't have to have coaching/managerial experience if you are a baseball guy in a lot of organizations.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, especially to modernize it and make it more of an extension of the front office. Front office experience would obviously be a valuable thing. Apparently, White Sox players and Jerry Reinsdorf were in attendance. This, Tanny, you haven't seen anything from Rick Hahn, right? So what we were talking about in transition, it seems like maybe the press release was worded oddly, but this is just the Tony La Russa press conference. I'm not seeing any quotes come across my timeline about offseason plans, player acquisitions, player movement, anything like that. This seems like it's a Tony La Russa press conference, and then the end of the season wrap will happen when the season's over.
As it should be. And yeah. We made light about that during crosstalk, and the White Sox certainly don't do everything the right way, but even for them to do something like that where they talk about the season while it's still going on, that would be pretty far-fetched, in my opinion, for them to do that. So
I agree.
No, but I haven't seen anything yet from Rick Hahn or anything like that. So, yeah, I think it's just going to be about Tony today.
Well, okay, good. That's how it should be.
You know, Rick Hahn is Jewish, tomorrow being Yom Kippur, tomorrow evening, and then Wednesday, it's possible that was a factor. So, we'll see if Rick Hahn does end up speaking today when the media is there for a ball game of very little consequence tonight.
Yes, you shouldn't do that, though. You shouldn't talk about the season before it actually ends.
Yeah, what if someone suffers a huge injury in the last couple of games or whatever? Yeah, I mean,
and I know you have enough sample size here, but still, just wait till the thing's over and done.
Talk Thursday. Right?
Or over the weekend, whatever.
Yeah, I baseball, they don't like to talk during the playoffs. They don't like to take away from the postseason, that sort of thing.
Day but after the season ends, Thursday would be just fine.
Yeah, that seems to make sense. But pretty all-encompassing statement from Tony La Russa, who also said he will not be taking a front office position as he gets treatment and deals with this secondary, not secondary in terms of significance, but second health issue. That is making him retire from baseball.
Has it been addressed, guys? I haven't seen it in terms of Tony's future, if he will have any position of any kind. I think with the health issues, maybe he's going to go ahead and focus on that. I have not seen anything in regards to him having a sort of an advisor role, which
I think
be
that's what I was
to.
Just saying. That yeah, he's not going to do anything like that at least next year. But he said the team is set up for success next year. So I don't think Tony La Russa is going to be, you might see him around, might be in Jerry's owner box or something like that, but I do not believe that there's going to be a title for Tony La Russa next season.
There's a lot to figure out with this team in terms of the roster construction, in terms of, the holes that need to be filled, the surplus of bats, and we'll have a full off season to discuss it. But I think it is a well-written and, classy message. He ends with gratitude. Does Tony, saying that no manager has ever been more fortunate than he has in terms of the players and the organizations and such, but this is still obviously an ignominious end to a Hall of Fame career.
Jalen Johnson said that, he looks at and circles the Justin Jefferson matchup now that Devontae Adams is out of the division. It's next week, but we don't know if Jalen's going to be able to play. What's the experience like of watching these games when you're not playing? We'll talk to him about that and more next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.